That goes like this. Hello and welcome to the Nukem Vivarium. I think it's the coolest vivarium in the world. They actually had to get this nurse log in here and then put the roof on it. And they have a wonderful library, including The Butterflies of Cascadia by one of our readers today, and at least one other book, I think Wintergreen too, is there. You can see the library in the back. Really a working studio is part of what the deal is here. And I wrote about it in my book Pig War and Other Songs of Cascadia. I came here, I think, 5 or 6 Saturdays in a row. I delved into the books. I wrote about the experience. And here we are with the nurse log from the Green River watershed. They actually try and mimic the kind of light seasonally. It changes seasonally to try and replicate what nurse log had in her crib, in her home environment. However you want to say that. I guess that's not a scientific term, is it? But you know what I'm talking about. So I'm Paul Nelson, and this is the last day of our 8th Cascadia Poetry Festival. Have you been having a good time? Several people have asked a Virgo how it's going, and that Virgo responded, almost perfect. So, just in case you're wondering, I see that there have been some flaws, but we're working on that. We learn, and for the 9th Cascadia Poetry Festival next year, I believe it's October 2 and 3, we will try and iron out some of those wrinkles. So just to let you know, I'm working. We're done having events at the Richard Hugo House, but we're grateful to be in partnership with the Richard Hugo House, and that deserves a hand because they've been around a long time. After this reading, we'll be going to the Subud House, or Spring Street, Seattle. I've been a member of the Subud spiritual community for 21 years, and there's at least 2 Subud people in the room here, and we're grateful for Subud and the Spring Street Center, and of course the Seattle Art Museum, and Heaven, who set this up. Set up by Heaven. How can you go wrong with that? Some of our sponsors include ArtsWA for Culture, the Seattle Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs. By the way, for Culture and Seattle Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs, so helpful, the support that we get from them. So when you're voting in the city of Seattle and people express support for these entities or in King County, please support them because it's really helpful. NEA through ArtsWA, Westaff and Carbonation Press, Raven Chronicles had the table. We have a book table in the back with books from some of the readers, so there will be some book sales before we head out today. These entities help us a great deal, but we depend a lot on individual contributions. We depend on people taking workshops. We depend on people becoming members of the Founder Circle. And Giving Tuesday is coming up on December 3. I know you're going to be inundated with text and emails, but not as much as you are getting election texts, right? So it could be worse. Amazing. So Giving Tuesday is coming up, and keep us in mind for that occasion. Because these fests, we subsidize them, right? Someday, hopefully, we'll have enough money to make it go. But in the meantime, we keep making it go. I want to thank our board of directors. We have several board members here today, including the person who's going to be your master of ceremonies. He's the chair of philosophy at Seattle U. He's a Soto Zen priest whose Dharma name is Tetsu Zen. He's an avid book collector. I mean, he's insane. Meredith?
In so many ways.
Meredith? When you told him that you'd sold Paper Hound books to your library, he went in there that day, I think.
No,
an hour later. And spent $400 that time, and I think he's been in a couple of times since. So he thanks you for that. And he also has news about another rare book somewhere here that he's going to tell you about and take over. So please, a warm welcome for Jason Wirth.
Good morning, everyone. I'll try to project. I first wanted to mention this special rare book. You heard about it the very first day. I'm hoping that there may be a buyer among you for it. All the money from the book goes directly back into Watershed Press. to help us continue to publish books. I want to show you what it looks like. So it's a beautiful handmade slipcase. It's hand-bound. You open it up, and it, first of all, just the contents are amazing, but then it's got over 20 signatures of contributors. And then each one comes with, and it's a strict limitation, by the way, 26 copies. So there's 26 copies in the world, that's it. Then each one comes with a signed print by one of the artists, and it's absolutely gorgeous, I think. I will just say, not that I pay any attention as a philosopher to the rules of the secondary market, this would go, the price of this print on the commercial market is more than the whole ensemble here. So if some of you want to get together and socially own a copy, all contributing, that's fine. Let you work out. But it'd be nice to sell one while we're here, just to be less poor. $500. So everyone's suddenly incredible silence. I'm back in the Zendo. Wow. It's pure silence.
That's just 50 cents a person. You can all own it.
Yeah. Social ownership. That is the future, by the way. So think about that.
Like a tool library.
I like how you're all thinking. So, welcome to this morning's program next to the wonderful tree log here, nurse log. The nurse log, I think, is very moving in terms of the work that we're trying to do, because it's reminding us that we belong to ancient processes that all have a future. That's not the economic system. The future in the economic system is the quarter, maybe the year. But we need to start getting back on the 500-year plan. We need to all become ourselves intellectual and spiritual nurse logs. From our work together comes the future, the hidden life. But towards that, we have three amazing poets this morning. The order is going to be the first, Robert Michael Pyle, and then it's going to be Sharon Hashimoto, and then Matt Treese, and then Bob Pyle will then conclude the program with a short poetic benediction, single benediction. So Robert Michael Pyle, well, he got the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Oh, wait, I forgot. It's the United States. We would never do that. But he deserves it, to be sure.
Let's wait on that.
It's been,
at least a Wednesday.
Yeah, I just remembered I'm a country I'm living in. But, you know, he deserves it. This is someone who's dedicated his entire life to make us all better and to make the place that makes us who we are better. And he really is, I think, the Cascadian Renaissance person. Completely at home in science, deeply respected in the Lepidopterist community, butterflies and moths, poet, novelist, award-winning nature writer, author of 28 books. Some of you, I'm sure, know some of them. Wintergreen, I think that was just a game changer for a lot of people, certainly here in Washington. It just was a big reset for our culture here. Sky Time in Grays River, Where Bigfoot Walks, that was also one of the key sources for the movie, somewhat fictional in nature, about Bob Pyle's time in the forest looking for Bigfoot. It's a really funny movie. It's not that true, but it's really funny and good. Novelist, Magdalena Mountain, the Butterfly Books, which you've already heard about, one of which is here right now. John Burroughs Medalist, I mean, that's the holy grail for nature writing. Guggenheim Fellow, 5-time Pushcart nominee, Pen America Art of the Essay finalist. It's extraordinary accomplishments. And his new collection of poetry, Swimming with Snakes, will appear with a press that you may have heard of, Watershed. Watershed has got its next book. We're absolutely thrilled. And we're absolutely thrilled that he is here. So, Bob Pyle.
Thank you, Jason Sun. The Stick and I thank you for being here. 1 week from tomorrow, in a different world, I'm getting the first half of my total butt transplant. And the Stick might well, will still be with me, no doubt. But the Stick and I want to make our land recognition that you've been very good about all doing. And this time I'm going to precede the Duwamish and, of course, recognize them and their neighbors as well. But prior to the Duwamish and the Salish peoples were the peoples of Tsuga Heterophila and Pseudo Tsuga Menzizii and Picea Sitchensis and all the rest of the tree people and the other organisms with which they co-evolved and are still doing, including in this room with us. Thank you, dear Sister Amlock, right there. Thank you for having us. And thank you to the visionaries who built this place, made this place for Sister Hemlock there, and are having us here today. When Jason asked me if I would take part in the festival this year, first of all, I was very honored. And then when he said I got to read it in the Newcomb Vivarium, I said, I'm there. And my only little bit of resistance is that that I had not been in Seattle, though I used to live here with great pleasure for years and years. Since the plague, I just had not been in the city. The last time I'd been here was 5 years ago to read for my novel when it came out, Magdalena Mountain. I hadn't been here since. I have never even seen the waterfront without the viaduct, and that'll be my great pleasure tomorrow morning. I'm really looking forward to that. But I'm here for this occasion, and so honored to be. And I'm glad to be back in Seattle, which I still dearly love. My mother was brought up here, right by Ravenna Ravine, which was her special place, and it became mine by legend. My own was an old ditch on the east side of Denver. But the Ravenna Ravine, which I later lived almost next to, became my sanctuary. That was my mother's, and that's what really introduced me to the idea of each person's special place, which I think you may all have, whether it's a back 40 or a wilderness or a vacant lot, nothing less vacant than a vacant lot, or this place here now. So thank you for having us. I'm going to begin with the title poem from my collection, Chinook and Chanterelle from Lost Horse Press, and the cover has the two prints, they were both block prints, by my late wife, Tia, of whom I read last night. Thank you for the opportunity to do that. Of the Chinook and the Chanterelle. A recent gift, first time I've worn it here for you. And I hope all my poems will be honoring this place, this bigger place, and all of you in our community. Chinook and Chanterelle, for Tia. What gifts these are from river and woods, these coral ones, muscled strumpets, plucked from the fisher's nets where the shrunken runs still shine. And these golden ones, fluted trumpets, pinched from the forest floor where the second growth hemlocks still stand. Surely, we are unworthy of such as these. But if enjoyment of succulent flesh is any mitigation, if the tongue's fierce possession of taste can be extenuation, if the way we chew and praise and slurp and swallow and say it, worship this fin and stipe, these silver scales and meaty caps, can sing the hard shimmer in the stream, can cry the soft glimmer on the mossy floor, can save us. If these gestures make any difference whatsoever, well, then maybe we deserve them after all. Thank you, and I'm going to read two, still with the forests, that were in Cascadia Zen Volume 1. Which was also a great honor to me to be with many of you in that and the brand new volume 2. And let us all again express our great congratulations to Paul and Jason and Adelia and everyone who's brought out volume 2, Dan and everyone. Now, we're praising the forest. I live in the rainforest in Wakayakum County, I live in the rainforest, and so I'm comfortable in here. Not as many pipes and things there, but but you know, Wintergreen was never an anti-logging book. It was an anti-bad logging book. And once people started to get that locally where I live, I wrote it after only 8 years in the Willapa Hills about the devastation of that land because it's all private, no public lands to speak of. Well, there are some left, just a little bit. They're on the block. The last legacy forest in Wakayakum County is on the block tomorrow. And if you have not voted yet and you're a registered voter in Washington, please consider voting for Dave Up the Grove, which is the best name for a public lands commissioner ever. And that one vote may make the difference because he only won the primary by 43 votes. So your vote might make the difference in whether or not the last legacy forest in Wakayakum County will stand or not. But it's not all about being against logging. We're all part of the fiber economy, ecos, household, and in all respects. We're all complicit. We all take part and we all use it. And bless the trains, I came up here on a train. The loggers are not the enemy. We don't have enemies. Well, we do have some enemies here. It's not the loggers, it's not my neighbors, who were told all along there would be union jobs forever in the woods, and until there weren't either woods or unions there. But this poem is actually in praise of the people who go out there and do some of the hardest and most dangerous work in the world to make the stuff our books are printed on. And it can be done well. 3 a.m. at the all-night logging show. Well, okay, not really all night, but this operation starts up around 2 in the morning, shuts down early. We're used to logging around here. The ragged little mountain these guys are relieving of its alder has been logged before. The next patch over will go next year. The hill across the creek, last cut before I came here in 78, will be filled again in 10 or 15 years, I guess, for pulp, this stuff I'm writing on. Loggers always go to work early, stepping into their clammy, stagged off jeans about the time I turn in some nights. It's not unusual to hear their whistle bugs pipe up at 6, and the first loads grumble down the road before dawn. But this logging in the middle of the night is a new one on me. The sharp bleats of the bug and the backup beeps, the bass thrum of the cables and higher whine of the chokers, the diesel growl of the cutter loader, the scrape of the carriage, and when they buck, the urgent howl of the chainsaws. The spotlights in the window, they make a mess of sleep, the all-night loggers do. Out there working in the face-slapping rain, the limb-whipping wind, the frigid fog. I shiver, pull the blanket higher, turn back into my ragged dreams. And the other one that was in volume one, Paul, you mentioned the right tools. This is about the right tool, and the other race I'm dying of tension about tomorrow, besides the obvious one, besides Dave, is my third district congresswoman, Marie Gluzenkamp-Perez, who's good, and her opponent is bad. And I don't believe in many dualities, but I'll say that. And you can't vote for her. I don't think anybody's in my district but me, but a great deal matters there. And she introduced legislation in Congress to be able to fix things. She and her husband are auto mechanics themselves. And it's legislation to be able to fix things and not have everything become obsolete right away. That's what this poem is about too. And I owe much from this poem. Please come in. We saved a school for you. I owe a lot of this to Gary San because he read it for me and gave me permission to use his name and taught me a new word for this poem as well. And we were so glad to find out last night that his book was put on the stand in error. The rumor is greatly exaggerated. The Pulaski on the Flagpole. What's that up on? Oh, so I had a writing residency at Billy Meadows in the Wallawa National Forest a few years ago, and we occupied an old Forest Service guard station, both for the writing workshop that Kim Stafford taught while I was having my retreat. The Pulaski on the Flagpole. What's that up on top of the flagpole anyway? Upright handle, double blades at right angles. Why, it's a Pulaski. Firefighter's tool, logger's tool, one end axe, one adze. Handle of the type they call fawn's foot. To fell a burning snag, split a smoldering old log, cut out a root. Nothing is versatile. Nothing else serves half as well. Gary Snyder says the most important thing, and perhaps the hardest too, is to know your own proper work. One thing GS knows is his way around the woods. Another is this tool that Ranger Ed Pulaski made 100 years ago. Wouldn't they both grin at this buck-tooth salute on top of the flagpole? No one looks for the flag that flew over Billy Meadows' guard station. No one runs anything up that old pole, but notes a damn fine tool up there, lashed to the top by someone who knew his own true work all right and knew its worth as well. Thank you, Gary Son, and may you long live. Thank you. And I don't know, Danny and I and the other invertebrate biologists in the room have not done perhaps the invertebrate survey of this room that should be done someday. That would be fascinating. There's a PhD in there, at least one. Five masters or one good PhD. And but I don't know if there are any slugs in there, but there may be. Certainly it's the habitat. So this one, in symmetry to the Pulaski and the flagpole, is called the banana slug on the totem pole. This came from another residency at the Sitka Center for Art and Ecology on the Oregon coast by Cascade Head. When I worked for the Nature Conservancy back in the late Eocene, managing the Northwest Reserves, my favorite preserve among all the Northwest Preserves was Cascade Head on the Oregon coast. And later I went back there to the Sitka Center and wrote quite a lot. The banana slug on, and Sitka Center has a lot of indigenous and modern art, and those two are not necessarily the opposite, but a lot of Northwest Cascadian art there. A couple of them were excellent poles that were carved in the Haida or Kwaku'ul traditions on site, in situ, and then set up. The banana slug on the totem pole sits atop the heap above coyote, jay, and raven. All four tentacles poke like pigtails from its head. Beside the rasping mouth, long ones watching, short ones sniffing, all four palping the heady air at such an elevation. For such a creature of the ground to find itself so far aloft, peering over evolutionary betters down below, must be a rare and pleasant perch. Maybe not the first banana slug that's ever crowned a pole in totem times, but maybe it's the only one ever carved of cedar log. No slime trail left behind to show how it got way up there. And three short poems about tomorrow and its precedent a few years ago. And I'm sorry to bring it back to mind, but maybe needfully so. These are, the next ones are from Last Man in Willapa with the Rainbow Bear. whom I met at my mailbox, looked just like that. This is called The Day After the Election. And bless you all, bless us all, whatever comes. November 2016. A red oak leaf and a brown beech leaf lie across a wet sword fern frond in the late sun. A chorus frog does a hoarse solo on the hill. A flicker cries a series of sharp single notes. The sun falls, the mist rises all over the valley. These things, at least, I guess, will go on. And this one is called The Day After the Inauguration, January 2017. A pair of golden eyes spin and dive in a riffle below the covered bridge. Hazel catkins swell and stretch. Not long till bud burst. Back home, chickadees have found the feeders at last. Feared they weren't coming at all this year, but here they are. Followed by this. But I am a creature of the rainforest, and I dehydrate rapidly. You have good water at your house, Bear. Last week, my bottles were all filled from a spring up in the Oregon Coast Range that I'd love to stop at. I found a neat little spring in a little niche in the Willapa Hills, but I have wonderful water in Grays River as well. Water is good. This is called What If We Had a Poet for President? From 2018. The last stanza refers to a means of communication that came into greater prominence in about 2018 than it ever had before. What if we had a poet for president? We had a well-published one, you know, in Jimmy Carter. Washington, Adams, Lincoln, and Obama also wrote verse in office. We could have had a good one in Gene McCarthy, Chicago 68. And then the war would have ended 5 years before it did. There would have been no Watergate, who knows what else. Poets have seldom called the shots. Nezahualcoyotl was a poet and ruler of Texcoco in Mexico, but his verses did not prevent the Spanish conquest of the Aztec Empire. Look where his odes got Neruda and his boss, Allende. Prosody being no match for the CIA. Even so, imagine how humane ideals might reign with Whitman in the White House, or how hope and wild geese might thrive on a Dickinson-Oliver ticket. How the world might make sense. Right on. Whatever it is. I used to live here. Right on. I'm glad it was this poem. Okay, back to the beginning of the stanza, if I may. Even so, imagine how humane ideals might reign with Whitman in the White House, or how hope and wild geese might thrive on a Dickinson-Oliver ticket. How the world might make sense if Snyder ruled the roost. But what do we get instead? The inarticulate dregs of an incurious mind, the bottom of the barrel, 140 characters deep. And I only have one more poem to read now, and then I'm going to finish at the very end with a short prayer to the forest. And this one, I wrote the lyrics, it's part of a, oh, clever. clever, subtle. Subtle move, that. It's part of a collaboration with the musician Chris Novoselic, who is a neighbor of mine and came down to the Willapa Hills after his dear friend and life partner in a way, Kurt, died, Kurt Cobain. And Chris is a neighbor now, master of our grange, very communitarian person who is also the honorary steward of our Hendrickson Canyon Old Growth Preserve as a natural area preserve, state preserve, that we worked for 20 years to save. And Chris lives adjacent to it as the honorary steward for it now. And he and I have written 11 songs and poems about our rivers and our place, and they're available all on the various streaming services, or I have CDs and LPs if anybody's interested, not with me. But I only bring that up because there is a wonderful instrumental part for this too, and you don't get that. You just get the words, the lyric. But I think it's a way for me to go out and get away from here and turn it over to the other poets who I'm so eager to hear. This is called The Notes, Notes from the Edge of the Known World. And these are the creatures that would live here in this habitat. When winter wren and varied thrush break into April voices, and elderberry branches crack and thrust, and Sitka spruce and caws of crow, and wild waves all slap on ocean shore. This small black beetle jaws a crumb, and smaller scarlet mite roves over needled dirt to somewhere we will never see, as sword fern rots upon its ancient mound and fiddleheads unfurl. When sorrel triplets burst upon the guileless scene and moss-hung branches point a way through trackless wood where puma sinks its teeth in throat of deer who gives its life unwillingly but has no choice. When somewhere on the other side of time and whirling world beside some withered waterhole a warthog coughs and baboon flashes scarlet rump and grimace blue and toothy at the other males, at swollen, gravid female, at lioness who charges, then withdraws behind the yellow grass. Then polar bears on permafrost and skuas over tundra sedge will take whatever sustenance the day affords, then sleep and sleep and sleep some more despite the midnight sun. As the forest gloom, as in the forest gloom the lichen hangs and sways above the snailish stream, and mushrooms crowd the mossy bank where hemlocks screen the sunlight from the silage of the slugs and slime of molds and thyme, where water bears and woodlice roam, bacteria and nematodes make way among the great and fleshy entrails of the world. And what about the turquoise-mantled giant clam, cemented in the coral reef beneath Antipodean skies, the urchins dragging spines across the limy bottoms, poking holes in water bags to drop the ocean new for every life on every tide, or clouds that drop their shadows on the desert floor, that parking lot for tortoises, where cactus reaches out for gods it never knew or needed. Flash floods scrape away whatever luck the horned toad ever had, which isn't much, it seems, until you think of otter clamped in orca's gape, or flank of desert oryx running red beneath the claws of leopard, every desiccated leaf and flower folded in upon itself, until you think of ants and worms and voles and frogs in tractor ruts, or salmon smolts in heron's bill, until you think of this great ape, the one that stands upright and poses every question ever asked in such a world where everything that grows breaks down and down and down, then grows and grows and grows and grows again. Thank you so much. Thank you.
As you all know, Greta Thunberg